Why was there a push within kind of the broader anti-war movement to de-link the issue of the occupation of Palestine from that of Iraq?
Well, I think we need to go back to the foundation of some of the, I would say, the non-governmental organizations and some of the entities that are within the anti-war movement in the United States. A great deal of these organizations are rooted in a liberal approach to conflict, in that they look at the conflict in terms of preserving the existing status quo rather than changing status quo to a more just situation. So, for instance, in the case of Palestine, their approach would be to attempt to preserve a non-conflict status. A non-conflict in this case would mean that the Palestinians are not resisting. Whereas if the Israelis are imposing, for instance, a certain manner of occupation, military and otherwise, colonial occupation, so long as there is no resistance, or the resistance of the Palestinians is not to a point that would upset the balance of forces, or that would, in fact, invoke an international crisis, that would be acceptable. So to them, that is, well, not all of them, but to some of them, that would be an acceptable approach. In Iraq, they feel that that approach was actually shaken. They feel that the colonial occupation that the United States has committed against Iraq has, in fact, created a situation where that peaceful, so-called peaceful, quote-unquote, presence or status quo is no longer the case. And so they attempt in various ways to bring that equilibrium where the Iraqis are subdued, the Iraqis are subjugated one way or another, but not necessarily in a not necessarily in such a manner that there is a violent imposition on the Iraqis to cause their pacifist presence, which means that for the movement in the United States, what would be required in Iraq is to pacify the Iraqis, is to create immodalities in Iraq that would, in fact, impose on the Iraqis a certain political structure, a certain political paradigm that would cause the Iraqis to be subjugated one way or another under a control of some sort of a power without any violent conflict. Now, to them, for instance, starvation, to them, that is some of the folks in the peace movement, starvation is not violence. Death caused by disease is not violence. So as a result, 10 years ago, or a little bit more, 12 years ago, when the same folks who wanted to de-link Palestine from Iraq raised the slogan, "Let the sanctions work," these are the same folks who said, "Let the sanctions work," to them, the sanctions that have killed about 1.5 million Iraqis, that's not violence. That is not something that is required to be terminated. Ending the sanctions was not an important issue, was not a central task, was not a central slogan. What was important to them was to let the sanctions do its work and change the regime in Iraq, as if we in the United States and much of the West are, in fact, our brother's keepers. We are the cup around the block to determine for people how to live or how not to live. So delinking Palestine from Iraq was, in fact, in the same context. They wanted to make sure, or they attempted to remove the notion of resistance from the construct of anti-war. They wanted anti-war to translate only to certain political meanings, and that is the liberal discourse that the end of conflict means the absence of certain types of violence imposed by a colonial power. De-linking Palestine is related to them removing the notion of resistance from anti-war, removing the notion of anti-imperialist discourse from anti-war, and actually removing the very embodiment of anti-war, and that is the folks who are resisting empire, resisting war, the Palestinian people, the Iraqi people, and other people in Afghanistan, in Colombia, in the Philippines, and so on and so forth. They wanted to take that out. By taking it out, and by maintaining a certain discourse, they would, in fact, secure or appear to secure funding sources. They would appease folks who, in fact, want to have control over that part of the world, but not violent control. They would, in fact, expand their base in the United States, but not necessarily within the victimized communities. And they would secure themselves as they would secure for themselves a position of center forward within a movement that is presumably about anti-war, but they would have transformed it to something other than what it's supposed to be. And as such, Palestine was essential to be removed. The other issue is that if Palestine is included, one would have to deal with the existential issues that are related to Palestine, issues pertaining to the very existence of the Palestinian people. One would have to deal with the issue of the Arab, of the pan-Arab notion of Arab states and Arab nations and so on and so forth. One would have to deal with issues pertaining to the right of return of people. One would have to deal with issues pertaining to the state of Israel and its partnership with the United States in the empire building project. One would have to deal with issues pertaining to the Democratic Party and the influence that, for instance, Zionists would have in certain sectors of that party. One would have to deal with issues pertaining to the Republican parties. One would have to deal with issues pertaining to the meaning of domestic war and foreign war and the relationship between the two. The fact that a war against the Palestinian people is the same war that is against the Arab and Muslim people and South Asian people in the United States, against immigrants in the United States, but it takes a different manifestation, and would have to link the two types of wars and the multiplicity and the various forms of wars together, and would have to actually bring an anchor the struggle of the Palestinian people within the struggle of the immigrant communities, within the struggle of the labor movement, within the struggle of the anti-war movement, within the struggle of the civil rights movement, and link that and package it all at once. That would mean that the Palestinian will no longer be marginalized, will no longer be relegated to the margin, and that would mean that you could no longer have an anti-war movement that is not centered on anti-imperialist discourse. Now that is very, very troubling to some of these folks. And as such, the reason it's troubling because it affects their funding, it affects their base, it means a political and ideological transformation in their perception, and it would also mean that they would have to ally themselves with folks who are actually fighting for self-determination. And that's the core issue. Anti-war is rooted in self-determination. Self-determination is rooted in anti-war. Self-determination is the antithetical formulation of anti-war. And anti-war is the antithetical, of war. And war is the antithetical formulation of self-determination, because war is the imposition of the other on a collective. And self-determination is the rejection of the other that is trying to impose on the collective. All of these things happened, and as such, there was a demand that Palestine would be removed, Palestine would not be addressed. But that failed and did not work, and in fact, today, the movement in the United States is unified as this open letter was instrumental in doing, and as the struggles of so many principled folks in the anti-war movement in the United States has done in bringing Palestine center forward, linking it to all the issues. And today, March 20th will take place under the dual slogan of ending colonial occupation in Iraq and in Palestine by all forces collectively.
I'm really glad you brought up the issue of self-determination there, because that kind of leads into another question I want to ask. One thing that the open letter brought up was there's kind of a call from the liberal part of the anti-war movement that you were just describing, to have the occupation of Iraq internationalized, and basically the response in the letter was that this is very racist and colonialist. Maybe you could elaborate a bit on that.
Yes, well, in that open letter and the discourse of our community, by the way, that open letter today has support of 260 organizations, networks, and coalitions in the United States, and about 120 of them in Palestine in the refugee camps, and about 100 or so around the world. So it has now reached a support of about 500 organizations, networks, and coalitions internationally, which is a massive show of support to a forward letter such as this one. That letter was a letter that put a discourse forward. It wasn't an apologetic letter. It was a letter that said, this is how we see things. Now, going back to the issue of internationalization, we believe that there has to come a time where the anti-war movement stops taking on the shape of empire on its own. In other words, it cannot act and behave as if itself is also acting in the form of empire. It cannot act in the context of manifest destiny, that we push our borders anywhere we can stop. It cannot act as if we have the burden, the white man's burden, to civilize. The internationalization of the occupation, the reason we thought it was racist, and we insist so, is that it is the right of the Iraqi people. It is the absolute sovereign right of the Iraqi people, however they wish, to select and determine however they want to chart their own discourse, their own political paradigms. If they want to bring the Arab League, they bring the Arab League. If they want to bring the United Nations, they bring the United Nations. If they don't want anybody, that's a choice they make. But it is not a choice that the U.S. peace movement, especially since it is set in the metropolitan state that is in fact imposing war on others, it is not up to the U.S. Anti-war movement to determine for the Iraqi people how, in fact, they should develop their own society and rid themselves of the colonial occupation. As such, we said, you cannot attach a condition to bringing the troops home. You cannot attach a condition to ending the occupation. Ending the occupation is a task that sits squarely on the people of the U.S., Canada, and all countries that are involved, primarily the United States, Britain, and all countries that are involved, but sits squarely on the shoulders of the American people in the United States, the U.S. people. Now, the reason this is an important task is because we are the ones who are, in fact, imposing that colonial occupation there. But it cannot be attached with how we, in fact, exit. We do not need an exit strategy to quit our colonial occupation. We believe that that notion that we need an exit strategy, a phased-out strategy, that we need to wait until the Iraqis civilize, we need to wait until the Iraqis have civil society, we need to wait until they are able to enact democracy, so on and so forth. We believe that this is, in fact, a colonialist and racist notion that says that only the West can bring to the East a civilized mechanism, even if that mechanism comes on the wheels or on the chains of a tank. So as such, we say the following. The Iraqis have the right to determine their destiny, to determine their future discourse, and it is not up to the U.S. movement to determine that discourse. The U.S. movement has only one task, and one task alone: pull the troops and the occupation, period. Nothing else. No strings attached towards anybody. And let the folks around the world enjoy their self-determination, unequivocal, total, unconditional self-determination in determining their own destiny.
The letter also suggests that in the United States right now, and since the war in Iraq started, even since the war on terrorism started post 9/11, that the voices of Arabs within the anti-war movement have been marginalized. Why would you say this is, or could you comment on that?
Sure. I would say, with the exception of the International Answer Coalition, which is a major coalition in the United States, if not the major coalition, with the exception of that, where Arabs and Muslims have actually clear leadership positions, not just in the coalition steering committee, but in the actual formation of the coalition, the actual grassroots manifestation of the coalition. Anywhere else, I would say, the role of Arab Americans and Muslims has been tokenized at best and marginalized in most cases. How is that the case? What happens is that our case have become ornamentalized, which means we have become an ornament. When we are needed, it's kind of like a Christmas tree, if you will, since we just went through Christmas. Every year, a family, Christian family, who wants to put up a Christmas tree, or anybody who wants to put a Christmas tree, would go and buy some ornaments and stick them on that tree. New ornaments, the ones that would look good for the time, the one would make the tree a little bit more exciting. That movement, the anti-war movement, has ornamentalized us, just like it did with Nicaragua, it did with El Salvador, it did with Cuba, it did with South Africa, it did with poverty, it did with labor, it did with the environment. There's always a hot topic at some point, a topic that can generate funding, a topic that has mass appeal, a topic that can in fact be put forward, but it has to be packaged right. It has to be cleaned, and it has to be dusted, and it has to be molded in such a way so as not to really tip the tree one way or another. It has to be hung on that branch without, in fact, tilting the branch too much. It has to be lightweight. It has to look good. It has to act in a certain way, but it has to be lightweight. It cannot have its own center of gravity. It cannot be an anchor in itself. It cannot speak for itself. It cannot be a centerpiece. Not one ornament can be a centerpiece. And in that case, what happens is that we as Arabs, in this case, we speak, for instance, we were at all times asked to appear. Oh, you can have an honorary position, you can have a speaker, you can bring in a couple of folks. Oh, let's make sure that now we have a woman that is dressed in a headscarf, hijab, speaking. Now let's get a bearded man speaking. Now let's get a guy with an accent speaking. Once they're done, okay, check, check, check. They're done. Okay, you're down. We're done with this issue. Now let's go to the real procession of the celebration we are calling anti-war procession. Now that's a problematic issue. That's a problematic issue because in our struggle in anti-war, in our struggle for a popular movement, there's a very important notion of the creation of narrative, the creation of knowledge, the actual formulation of one's own discourse. And only those who are affected, victimized by a particular form of oppression are the ones who are able to narrate that oppression, narrate the stories of that oppression, and are the only ones who are able to present the demand, the collective demands of those who are affected. Nowhere, nowhere could we have ever imagined that Caucasian folks in the United States would have gone to the civil rights movement and told African Americans in the United States that now we would tell you how to, in fact, lead your struggle against segregation and before that against slavery. Nowhere. Now, that normalization of the struggle that the affected people, the oppressed people, can in fact speak for themselves, can in fact narrate their own struggle, requires the centrality of their leadership, which means that we would no longer be seen as someone guests at somebody else's table. The movement is not something that we just come to and leave. It is us, it is our lives, it is our neighborhoods, it's our living rooms, it's our grandparents, it's our canes and strollers and children. It's what we live for, not because we choose to, but because it's imposed upon us. And as such, the centrality of our leadership, our articulation of leadership, who we are, how we see ourselves, how we present ourselves in our accents, how we present ourselves in our demeanor, how we present ourselves in everything, the totality of our existence, needs to be respected and needs to anchor a movement that is about the struggle of people, be it in the United States, in Canada, or anywhere else. And that is important. The anti-war movement could not deal with that, not all of it, sectors of it, could not deal with that, and as such, attempted to marginalize us. And when it was needed, they attempted to bring in a token, or two, or three, or four, just to say, well, we got him, we got the ornament. You want an Arab voice? Well, we got an Arab voice. You want a guy with a dark skin? We got one. You want a woman with a hijab? We got one. That's not the case. We're talking about a collective narrative, a collective political program. And that's what, and that is something that is very, very important. Then they tell you when you do that, that means you want to change dramatically and upset the balance of power. You want to challenge how we are. And we say, no, no. We are presenting for ourselves and you what we see as fit. We want to be members, constitutional members of the society. Our belonging to the society should not be subject to an ideological belonging to liberal politics or to right-wing politics or to left-wing politics. Our constitutional membership, our constitutional belonging should be taken as is, as a collective unit of a people coming to a society as immigrants, wanting to belong and wanting to develop that society and wanting to anchor what is best in that society and wanting to anchor the struggles in that society along with everybody else. In other words, march shoulder to shoulder with everybody else in the same struggle, but not stand any 1 millimeter less or 1 millimeter taller. In other words, we want to be at equal to all in every aspect. And that required our central leadership. And that would also mean that we decide who our leadership is. And that leadership is not hand-picked, that we are not now seeing, or at least where they tried to present to us, folks who were hand-picked because they were timid, because they were cleaned, because they were groomed, because they were manicured, because they were told how to talk and when to talk, when to be quiet and when to raise their voice. That's not the case. We want to be who we are. Join, link arms, shoulder to shoulder. Take that step forward, take that march forward, but do it together to make a society better for all, regardless of race, regardless of religion, regardless of sexual orientation, regardless of gender, regardless of class, so on and so forth. But that does not mean that we have to also abandon our identity. And that is very, very crucial. That our respect and our anchoring in our identity and who we are is what propelled us to say, in this movement, we insist on who we are just as much as we insist in our partnership with those who want to make a better United States and a better world. That required a leadership on our part.
Just over a month from now, on March the 20th, is going to be the next major international demonstration against the occupation of Iraq. And, of course, International Answer, as well as many other coalitions around the world, are busy mobilizing for that right now. The last question I wanted to ask you was, what would you like to see come out of this coming demonstration on March the 20th?
March 20th needs to be the mobilization to turn the corner. We turn the corner on the notion of what anti-war means. And we finally provide a definitional discourse that anti-war should be rooted and anchored in the belief of self-determination for folks everywhere. Self-determination requires full respect for movements and communities. Self-determination means full partnership, equitable partnership. March 20th needs and must be the announcement that only through equitable partnership, only through respect for folks and communities and peoples around the world, respect for their right to self-determination, unconditional, unfettered self-determination, only then can we begin to transform this antithetical formulation to war, and that is the anti-war movement. Only then can we formulate that to be, to be the alternative or an alternative or a tool that would plug into an alternative discourse to this empire building process that we are all seeing these days and feeling. March 20th is a definitional point. March 20th is a definitional date. In the United States and in much of the world, we were able to win great victories in that context, in actually transforming the meaning of anti-war. March 20th needs to be a materialization of these victories and a projection forward. It should be the beginning of a new era for a movement that has now gone through a transformation in its understanding of how it can, in fact, lead a movement such as this one. No longer could one say anti-war requires the exclusion of Palestine. No longer could one say anti-war requires tokenization of the Arab. No longer could one say, oh, I would only raise ending the occupation in Palestine, but I would not deal with the right of return, or I would not deal with issues of existential reality for the Palestinians. That could not happen anymore. You have massive amounts of organizations, networks, and coalitions who have, in fact, came out clearly and said, on the issue of Palestine, regardless of any position you take on Palestine, if you attempt to abrogate, diminish, or sidetrack the right of return, you are acting contrary to the wishes of the Palestinian people. Many, many organizations, all of those who have signed on, and many, many, many more to sign on, and who haven't probably seen this, would also agree that anti-war movement requires partnership and leadership of the victimized communities. And they are also in agreement that we can no longer masquerade occupations and colonialism with another face, give it a facelift, give it a new look, that colonialism must end and must quit, that occupations must end and must quit. These are definitional points. These are definitional points for March 20th, saying the following, that anti-war should not be subject to the political expediency of the select few. Anti-war should belong and be rooted in the wishes and the programs of the grassroots who are trying to build a better society for all, who are trying to formulate school districts and parks and neighborhoods and states everywhere in collaboration with each other on the basis of respect for self-determination and the integrity of the collective and the individual to speak their own language, to speak their own narrative, and articulate their demands along with others to reach a consensus amongst us as people everywhere. That's the alternative, and that's what March 20th is all about.
Well, thank you for being on the phone with us today, and we wish you all the best of luck in your organizing.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it. I appreciate having me on.